Welcome to a day of hope and promise, to a place of peace and comfort, to a journey toward truth and justice, and to a community of love and courage that will help along the way. Welcome to the podcast of the First Universalist Unitarian Church of Wausau. I'm Julie Trombley. I serve this congregation as the Director of Religious Education, and I'm so glad you're listening in today. If you'd like, join me in reciting our chalice lighting words. They're in your order of service. We light this chalice for the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the fire of commitment. We light this symbol of our faith as we gather together. Our reading today is the Mary Oliver poem titled Mindful. Every day, I see or I hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. O good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass.
Thank you.
Every day, I see or I hear something that more or less kills me with delight. Those words live on a sticky note posted to the computer in my home office because I'm the type of person who appreciates reminders. A few weeks ago, my 10-year-old jutted his chin towards that sticky note and said, "Not in quarantine." Quarantine is his generic term for all things COVID-19. He's had a hard time with all of the changes that have come the past few months. Kids have not been spared from the emotional roller coaster most adults have experienced this spring and summer. I fully acknowledge and respect that. In that moment in my office, I pushed back a bit and said that even when things are hard, even in a pandemic, I thought that delight was possible if we remembered to watch for it. I even gave a few examples of delightful things that have happened this summer. If you know my 10-year-old, it won't surprise you to hear that my opinion and examples did little to change his perspective, but the conversation did get me thinking. We live in a culture obsessed with happiness, not the transient emotion that visits our days, but a permanent state of being that for some reason we think we should be able to achieve if only we read the right book or watch the right TED Talk or listen to the right podcast. I would argue that chasing any one emotion and wanting it to take up permanent residence is foolish and impossible. Studies have identified 27 distinct emotions that humans feel, and researchers suggest that we experience many of those 27 each and every day. The idea that we feel happy or delighted or joyful or any other one emotion all day long, every day, just isn't realistic. But delight, a feeling of great pleasure or joy, an intense momentary experience of positive emotion, can and do show up in our days. We can expect them to pop up for brief moments and then fade on good days and even on the worst days. As the title of Mary Oliver's poem suggests, we do have to be paying attention. We do have to be mindful if we're going to catch joy and delight. As Oliver says, they usually don't show up in the exceptional or the very extravagant. Joy and delight show up in ordinary, common moments throughout our day when we remember to look for them. Ross Gay, professor and author, recently decided to spend the 42nd year of his life looking for delight, and each day writing about a delight he experienced. The result is his collection of essays titled The Book of Delights. Gay describes his practice as the development of a delight muscle, and writes that the more he studied delight, the more delights there were to study. Watching for delight made it show up more often, as with most things we approach with mindfulness and attention. What I appreciate most about Gay's approach to delight is that he has no Pollyanna quality whatsoever to it. He regularly holds moments of delight right next to moments of pain and injustice and grief. As humans, we've evolved to give particular attention to things that feel negative or painful. That attention might just save our life. But if we're going to so easily give thought and energy to the negative, it only seems fair to give some thought and energy to the positive. Ross Gay does this expertly, regularly holding two opposite truths, never avoiding the painful, but choosing also to see the joy and delight. That makes his essays feel that much more honest and real to me, and I think makes his writing that much more relevant to the world we're currently living in. As much as I'd like to some days, I'm afraid that ignoring the challenges, the pain, the fear, the injustice we're all swimming in won't be very useful in the long run. But I do think that we could follow Mary Oliver's advice and Ross Gay's lead and at least turn some attention to that which brings delight. After my conversation with my 10-year-old, I set my mind to watching for delight to spring up in my days. Here are some of the things I noticed after being reminded to watch for them. A spontaneous and heartfelt "I love you" from my youngest child. An hour in a hammock with a good novel. A warm, sunny day in Wisconsin that wasn't humid. I didn't even know that was possible. The loud, wholehearted laughter of my middle child. A text from a friend sharing some small piece of good news. Seeing pictures from my niece's wedding and noting how incredibly happy she looked. Watching my daughter dance to unheard music in her headphones. A quiet moment at a lake. The way the morning light comes through the leaves outside my office window. A funny meme. The rap my middle child spontaneously composed and performed during dinner last night. And over and over and over again, my little backyard garden, created on a whim this spring, has brought me delight. The first ripe golden tomato brought so much delight that I had to send a picture of it to friends. That much delight begs to be shared. These days, my daily trip to my little garden box is a ritual of delight. What will I find today? A cucumber or zucchini ready to pick? More ripe tomatoes? Evidence that some small critter also enjoys my garden. Or maybe all I'll find is a quiet moment to myself. It is all delightful. These small, ordinary, delightful moments can add up to a lot of joy. It's true that many of those delights have a corresponding heartache. My practice has become the attempt to hold both the pain and the delight lightly, to know that the existence of one doesn't negate the other, not to ignore or push away the pain, not to wallow in it either, but to give my brain the challenge of holding two opposite truths, the disappointment and the joy, both at the same time. How could you go looking for delight in your days? You could take Ross Gay's approach and watch for it and write about a daily delight. Or you could take the approach of the designer Ingrid Fetter-Lee from her TED Talk titled Where Joy Hides and How to Find It, or her book titled Joyful, or her blog, The Aesthetics of Joy. Lee has studied elements of design that bring universal joy and has found that pops of bright color, round objects, and symbols of abundance like confetti or sprinkles all seem to make most people feel joyful. You could pick up a practice of looking for those design elements throughout your day, or you could actively work to bring more of those elements into your home or workspace. A third possible approach comes from the work of researcher Brené Brown. She went into a research project assuming that people who felt joyful would also report being grateful because of all that joy. What she found instead was that it was the people who were actively practicing gratitude who described themselves as joyful. In other words, an active gratitude practice can bring more joy to your life or to your attention. You could start a gratitude journal where every day you write three things that you're grateful for. You could share gratitudes at dinner or with a partner before bed or on a phone call with a friend. You could pause before you put food in your mouth and offer thanks to all those who played a part in getting it to you. the farmer who grew the ingredients, the people who harvested or processed it, the driver who got the food to your town, the grocer who stocked it in their store, the creativity that created the recipe you made, the hands that prepared it, the gas or electricity that cooked it, and on and on. Or maybe you could find gratitude in the fact that you woke up this morning and get another day in this wild and painful and wonderful world. When we stop to think about it, there really is an abundance of things to be grateful for. So perhaps double up on your joyfulness, and every day as you wake up, imagine all those gratitudes as colorful sprinkles on the ice cream that is this life you get another day to live. May it be so. I'll leave you today with closing words written by Amy Zucker Morgenstern. Never has it been more true than now. We extinguish this flame, but the sparks within us remain alight. From each of us, in our supposed solitude, the signals buzz and hum, sparkling through space one to another, connecting us invisibly but palpably. We are one, and from every window, our light shines.